This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Damon Davis. He is a special assistant at the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology at HHS. And here we're going to talk about the blue button mashup and talk about electronic health records and all kinds of things involving healthcare IT. But before we begin, what I always like to do is just this. Find a little about my guest. Maybe my listeners are going, well, geez, Damon, what's his background? How did he wind up at HHS, and how did he get involved in the whole area of consumer e-health and healthcare IT? Damon, perhaps you give us your background and how you wound up at HHS, please.
Absolutely, John. Thanks for having me on the show. My background has been in software testing predominantly. So I started off my career in doing telecom software testing. I did some contracting at the IRS. I did some work at the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS. So I sort of fell into health information technology. At ONC, I predominantly focus on our consumer e-health program. So at ONC, we've predominantly been focused on healthcare providers and their adoption of health information technology. But putting the patient at the center of everything we do has been core to ONC's principles. So we recently officially announced our Office of Consumer e-Health. There, I oversee our consumer-focused challenges and the management of our Consumer eHealth Pledge community, which is a community of over 400 organizations that have publicly committed to supporting consumer engagement in health IT. And you can check it out on healthit.gov/pledge.
Well, that's a great URL. We can use that feature in the show here. You know, when I've dealt with people who work with trade associations in town here, there's 3,500 trade associations in town, and a group come up with a brilliant idea that if you let people manage their information on their website, it's more accurate than if some administrative person does. And I think when it comes to electronic health records, when it comes to health records in general, that if you allow individuals to access information and provide their own correct mailing address and their own correct location, that it is more accurate. And I think this is, in the big picture, what's going on here is that people like you are sitting, well, how can we make the system more efficient? And one lesson is to engage patients and let them participate. And that's, I think, kind of the big picture for you, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that goes into sort of consumer engagement in health information technology is the idea that basically the patient is one of the most underutilized assets in the healthcare system. Patients are basically free fact checkers for their own health record. You know, as you sort of think about an individual's health record, there's a lot of rich data in there for people who have been in and out of the healthcare system for many, many years.
Look at your name, Damon Davis. If you Google that, there may be 20 Damon Davises out there. There may be 40 John Gilroys. And if you show up in the emergency room, they go, oh, Damon Davis, you're the guy who's a diabetic. You're going to go, whoa, 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 whoa.
That's exactly right. And that's the kind of thing that you want to make sure to correct early. You know how information sort of pervades and sort of traverses the information technology space, and you don't want information as wrong data to get out there. So you definitely want to make sure that you have your data correct, and you want to make sure that your provider has the best information about you. There's no way that an individual can help you to make a decision about your healthcare if they have incorrect data. So you want to make sure that that data has been corrected.
You know, test after test, study after study shows that patients who are engaged in their own healthcare, they get better quality healthcare, and I think letting people get access to their own information, that's going to improve their healthcare. It makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely information out there that says, an engaged patient is less likely to be readmitted into the hospital after going home. They're less likely to suffer from complications in their healthcare due to lack of communication between their providers. So being engaged as a patient has significant payoffs for your own health. Not just inside the healthcare system, but outside the healthcare system. Like I said before, you know, we spend a lot of our time outside of our healthcare system making our own decisions. And so it's important to be engaged, you know, in no matter where you are in health.
We have an anniversary here, August 2012, and the anniversary is a two-year anniversary, not much of an anniversary, but a significant anniversary. A couple years ago, folks at the Veterans Administration, they were kind of scratching their heads trying to figure out how to make their healthcare system more efficient. They came up with something called the Blue Button, and they figured maybe 15,000, 20,000 people would take advantage of the Blue Button over there, but it exploded, didn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Blue Button is a phenomenal sort of example of what actually happens when you grant people access to their own personal health information. You know, they did a soft launch of the Blue Button download capability, which is basically a tool that allows an individual to gain access to their own personal health information. They did not do a lot of fanfare around the launch of the tool. And in no time, they had thousands and thousands of downloads by veterans across the nation who were interested in accessing their own healthcare. You know, many people know that veterans get healthcare both inside the Veteran Administration structure, but they also get healthcare from private sector providers. And so it's incredibly important for people to be able to coordinate their care across the different sectors of healthcare. And so it's my understanding that the VA is expecting nearly a million downloads in the very near future. So it's a tremendous sort of nod to what it means to give a patient their individual access to their own personal health information.
And if you think about it, well, we have a lot of veterans who live all over the United States, and they move like most Americans. So if you are a veteran of the Marine Corps living in Roanoke and you decide to move to Cleveland, Ohio, well, then what about your healthcare records? If you get in an accident or something, how's it? And so what they try to do is they try to come up with a system where a person who is a veteran could, you know, help generate their own personal health records. And if they move from veterans facility to veterans facility, it would go along with them. And so this was the initial, you know, the impetus for doing this Blue Button, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I said, you know, people utilize their own personal health information in a myriad of different ways. But as you've stated, the ability for a person to take their data with them from provider to provider and basically be the mediator of their own healthcare information is incredibly powerful.
You know, separate from the VA and separate from the HHS, if you just look at the healthcare informatics industry, you find out that electronic health records, EHRs, the numbers of those have doubled since 2009, so mm-hmm. So that's a good mark there. And I think this is a step towards an electronic health record. So this is a personal health record. What we're going to do is maybe in the next block talk more about personal health records and compare them with the whole idea of electronic health records. I want to focus more on ONC and some of your challenges over there. If you talk to people like Todd Park, if you talk to people like Farzad over there, you find out that the three main areas you're trying to work in, and this is great areas, is access to information, action, and attitude. Those are the three A's, the triple A's over
there.
Right. Tell us more about the triple A's.
Sure. So I'm going to start actually with attitudes first, because as you can imagine, a change in attitude is probably the core and most important thing in any kind of overarching change. So when we think about attitude changes, we talk about supporting a shift in attitudes about the traditional role of the patient and the provider in the healthcare sphere, and the role that technology can play in empowering patients to become more engaged partners in their own healthcare. With that sort of attitude change will allow for an increase in access to the information. So what we're thinking about is the promotion of easier access for patients and consumers to get secure, timely access to their personal health information. And with that then, once you have the information, it's imperative that you take action with it. So what we think of is the sort of catalyzation of the development of tools and services that help consumers and their providers to take action with their health information. So attitudes, access, and action are really the consumer e-health program's three A's for consumer engagement.
You know, if we relied on paper-based technology, paper-based health records, I mean, think of that fellow who is a veteran who moves from Roanoke to Cleveland. It's very difficult to have paper-based records transferred to a different physician, different hospital. And what happens if it's an unexpected event? There's a car accident, heaven forbid, in Topeka, and our veteran needs to have healthcare information transferred. All of a sudden, access to this information means better healthcare instantly, doesn't it?
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, I've heard examples working at ONC of providers who have told us, you know, I was able to give my patient the best care possible because, one, I had electronic access to all of their information at my fingertips, or two, that patient was out of my care and they were, you know, somewhere else across the country or out of the country, and I was able to electronically download and submit their personal health information to the provider from whom they were receiving care. And that's the kind of thing that really increases the coordination of care and increases quality of care nationwide. Because as you've, you know, sort of indicated in this example, if a person was to be in an emergency in another state, the provider that is caring for them at that time, they actually have to start from zero. They don't know anything about that patient.
Reduce costs. I mean, duplicate tests. I mean, why do all these extra tests?
That's exactly right. So you immediately you create an efficiency by that second provider having access to the most critical information possible about the patient. So they have some basis to start from with the care.
And I mean, it only makes sense if the focus is on reducing costs. And if you look at the paper-based healthcare system, one way to reduce costs is to have records available electronically as well as securely. When we get back, talk more about Datapalooza and the Blue Button and all kinds of initiatives over to NC. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Damon Davis, Special Assistant in the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT at HHS. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Damon Davis, Special Assistant in the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT at HHS, better known as ONC among the cognoscenti, or among the nerds out there. They know that as well. Before the break, we were talking about this concept of Blue Button and, you know, giving patients access to their information to make the system more efficient. Maybe you could define Blue Button for us and this mashup, this Blue Button challenge that you're working with. Please, Damon.
Oh, absolutely. So for context, the Blue Button is an easy electronic way for an individual to securely access their own health information. So what that means is an individual can simply log into their patient portal or whatever electronic way they go online with their healthcare provider, and they literally will click a Blue Button icon to download a copy of their own health data. And so the Blue Button download capacity is really a tool that can help individuals get access to their own health information, so they can more effectively participate in their own healthcare and manage their health and healthcare. In terms of the Blue Button mashup challenge that we have out, so the Blue Button mashup challenge is to help people to take action with their own health data as they've downloaded it. People need a way to contextualize that data once they've gotten it. You know, as I'm not clinically trained, so if I were to download my own personal health information, there may be things in there that I don't necessarily understand. So helping me to contextualize it is going to be very beneficial. One of the ways that you can contextualize that data is mashing it up with publicly available sources of data so that the context becomes more clear and you can educate yourself towards making more positive changes in your own healthcare. As I've said, the vast majority of healthcare decisions are made by the individual outside of the, you know, typical clinical care setting. So we want to make sure that we help people be as informed as possible about their own health and health care in order to move their own individual health and then obviously population health forward.
We had Todd Park in the studio here, the Pied Piper, the rock star.
Absolutely.
And he just walked in and charmed everyone, people coming down from the third floor to just take a look at him. And we were promoting the Datapalooza that took place a couple months back.
Yeah.
I went to it and had to bribe someone for a seat. And I don't know if you even had one after that. Every room was jammed. It was incredible.
Uh-huh.
Tell me about the Datapalooza and what's it got to do with the Blue Button mashup.
So the Datapalooza is basically a celebration of publicly available health data. Available health data is on healthdata.gov. And basically, you know, the United States government and the Department of Health and Human Services have collected, you know, vast troves of information for various reasons, be it research or what have you. But one of the things that Todd and many different people who are part of the Health Data Initiative Forum realize is that that health data is not being utilized if it's just sitting in those troves. So Todd and so many other people made an effort to free the data. They liberated it. And in so liberating it, they've opened it up so that developers can take it and mash it up with other kinds of ideas that they've had to see if they can find trends and, you know, basically create innovations in healthcare that are really going to drive quality forward. So it's been a fascinating experience. You know, the latest Datapalooza was well over 1,000 people, and it probably could have held more. And so we're really excited about future Datapaloozas as more and more people start to learn more about the information that's available through APIs on healthdata.gov.
There was a movie back a few years and talked about Build It and They Will Come. It was a baseball story. And I think this is what, you know, this is a story that Todd's trying to say, is that, look, there's a lot of information out here that the government has. Maybe it's information on the weather. Okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's information on geography. Mm-hmm. and maybe it's information on healthcare. And if we can just release this healthcare data, and maybe someone sitting in who knows where in Houston can come up with an idea, well, maybe I can take an application and merge it with this freely available data and come up with something practical. I mean, everyone's got these geographic things in their cars. That's something the government started 20 years ago. Everyone has got information on what's the weather going to be this weekend. I'm going to the beach. Well, guess what? That's from the government. A lot of freely available information. Let's take this available information and take advantage of it. There's tons available. That's the whole objective here, isn't it?
That's exactly right. And you know, there's a lot of people out there that are trying to create some serious innovations in the healthcare space. And, you know, a perfect example of that, again, is how many apps are available in the the iTunes and Android app stores. You know, people are very, very interested in tracking their own health, managing their own health. And as we sort of mash up the personal health element and the publicly available health data, you can really start to see trends and make your own analyses as to how it is that your own health is affected by a myriad of different factors. It could be dietary, it could be environmental, what have you. Let the developers have the data. Figure out some very creative ways in which to mash it up with personal health data and allow people to figure out what's best for their own healthcare.
You know, there's no monopoly on creativity. There's no monopoly on being bright and innovative. And maybe the innovation isn't inside the Beltway. Maybe the innovation is sitting out somewhere in Utah or in Southern California. And I think this is what Todd brings to the... And by the way, he's from Utah, isn't he? I'm thinking of that. I mean, not necessarily, but there's a lot of bright people all over the United States. I mean, there's not any reason why someone only working for the federal government, only working for a contractor in suburban Maryland has... any skill in this area. And I think that's what it's all about. And I think one way to promote that is with a challenge. If you say, look, here's a couple bucks, come up with something, you get the money. And there's money involved here, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So with the Blue Button Mashup Challenge, the total prize money is $75,000. It's broken out into a first, second, and third prize. The challenges are an interesting mechanism, truthfully. You know, challenges are a way for the government to bring public and private sector together and bring the best ideas and, you know, the top talent to bear on our nation's most pressing challenges. And that's really in an effort to promote innovation. And so really these are contests that pit the best solutions to any challenge against each other, literally to just declare the winner. So at ONC, our prizes and challenges mechanism is called the Investing in Innovations Program, or I2. And that program is promoting technology to find solutions that will drive better outcomes and engage users in their own health so that we can improve healthcare quality. But as you've said, you know, the knowledge is not all inside the Beltway. You know, there have been contests and challenges of different sorts where people from overseas have written in and said, can I participate? And they've literally come over and won and blown away the competition. So we really do like to open up challenges where available to all comers.
Last week, I was sitting in a classroom, and Steve Van Roykel is up in the front talking, and he gets around with a lot of people outside the government in all kinds of different areas because of his previous business contacts. And he said something that was fascinating. He talked about this healthcare challenge and healthcare initiative and data, and I think most of the people he ran into said, well, I didn't even know that was available.
Mm-hmm.
And you and Todd Parker out there on the street corner, carnival barkers going, hey, come here, look, this free stuff is available, do something with it. It's like, well, a lot of people don't even know about this. And all of a sudden you put $75,000 on the table and people go, now, wait a minute here, Damon. Keep talking, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we definitely want to encourage innovation and, you know, you've heard it before, money talks. And but we also want to reward people for the effort that they put into, you know, creating an innovation. You know, there are a lot of altruistic people out there that are creating these innovations just by virtue of the fact that they want to see healthcare be better. And many times it's for personal reasons, and the money really doesn't mean that much to them. But we do want to incentivize people to be creative as possible, to look for partnerships where they can create innovations and to bring those innovations to market. One of the things we try to do with the Challenge Program is create innovations that are going to be scalable. We don't want them to just be something that's going to win a prize and sit on the shelf. We want it to be something that we can promote broadly so that it can have wide adoption. So we really do enjoy the challenge mechanism because we see some really, really creative ideas come across our desks in the review process.
Well, maybe it's bragging rights, but there's nothing wrong with bragging rights and a couple dollars, too. I mean, there are people out there who are not independently wealthy, although there's some people who are independently wealthy and still work like 60 hours a day. I mean, we know people like that, but I think this challenge is interesting. So if you're listening to this, when there's snow on the ground, what you may want to do is go to your search engine and type in blue button mashup, and I'm sure you'll get all kinds of information on it. In fact, there's some videos out there too or something, aren't
there? That's right, there are. So you can get information about many ONC challenges and challenges, truthfully, across the government at challenge.gov. There are a myriad of opportunities out there, not just in the Department of Health and Human Services, but again, across all of our federal agencies. But we also at our Consumer eHealth program have a series of video challenges, which is really kind of fun and interesting. The current video challenge is the What's in Your Health Record challenge. So we know that very few people ask for a copy of their health record, even though we have a legal right to ask for it and receive a copy of it. So as I've said, you know, sometimes a health record doesn't have the most current information in it. And obviously you need that information to be current in order for you and your provider to make the best decisions possible. So if you were to access your personal health record, you know, you might find that there may be some small revisions needed. But on the flip side, you might find that there are some more significant revisions needed. And so you want to make sure that that information is up to date and current. So this What's in Your Heck Record video challenge has basically asked people to go and access your record and then tell us what you found. Tell us about the experience of asking for it and how it felt. And so we're looking forward to some really creative responses out of this video challenge.
Oh, video challenge is always a lot of fun. Let's take a break. When we come back, talk more about electronic health records and innovation. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Damon Davis, Special Assistant in the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT at HHS. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Damon Davis, Special Assistant in the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT, ONC, for the people over at HIMSS and the Cognoscentia there, ONC. You know, I have listeners that listen online, they listen in their cars, they listen to podcasts 6 months later. Some people prefer blogs, some people prefer tweets. There's just so many ways to distribute information these days. I have a blog at my company site at Armature. I'll be blogging about this interview. Are there blogs that you read or maybe your own blog or blogs you can recommend for my listeners?
Well, for the listeners, certainly ONC's Buzz Blog. It's B-U-Z-Z blog. And it's available on healthit.gov. It's a great resource for all kinds of health IT related information, like updates on consumer e-health, innovations and challenges, or updates on our grant programs, and you know, just a myriad of health IT issues. It's a really great resource. We've got some phenomenal people at ONC that do some great writing about the great work that they're doing, as well as the great work that's happening all across the nation. So it's an interesting resource.
At 6 o'clock this morning, I had my Google thing, I typed in ONC Buzz Blog, bang, got right there.
Uh-huh. That's
B-U-Z-Z-B-L-O-G, yeah. Alliteration and very distinctive. And I read a blog by a woman by the name of Ligia Ricciardi.
Ricciardi, that's right.
Ligia Ricciardi. And pretty bright, very, very well argued. Writing was perfect. I mean, and she talks about healthcare IT. Mm-hmm. And this is the one, you know, if I was involved in healthcare IT, I'd probably read her stuff all the time. And what's interesting is she talked about, guess what, about access to healthcare information. Mm-hmm. And in this blog entry, she said that 41% of a survey that they did with patients have never accessed their information on their health records. Mm-hmm. They had no idea it even existed. Yeah. And this is just an indicator of how I think the patients, how the consumers have to change.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's an attitude change. It's an information, you know, age change. You know, people need to recognize that, again, people have a right to their own personal health information, a right to access it, a right to make corrections to it. But more importantly, you know, people need to recognize that they have an active role to play in their own healthcare. And so it's really important for people to start to understand that you can be a partner with your provider. Don't just have healthcare done to you, but participate in your own healthcare.
I think it's not a passive thing. I mean, yeah. I think if you have a tooth that needs to be filled, you go to the dentist and you have to sit there, they fill the tooth or whatever. But I think with the physician, you have to engage with the physician and you have to be responsible for controlling your diet, for exercise, and for maybe providing him with information that he might not have known.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you're the one who is in control of your own health, you know, for the most part. And so, as I said, you know, so much of your own health takes place outside of a clinical encounter. It's imperative that people be involved in their own health and get the information back to their provider and really, you know, try to track your own health and so that you can improve your own health outcomes. We've heard so many stories of how people are utilizing health information technology and their access to information to improve their own outcomes. And it's really going to be a powerful movement going forward, especially with, you know, initiatives like the Blue Button as it sort of traverses the nation as more and more organizations adopt it.
If you go to GovHealthIT, you can find this video. An easier way would go to Google, and I think if you typed in ONC video challenge, you'd probably stumble on it as well. Yeah. And this video challenge talks about healthcare records. Again, going back to the blog we mentioned, is, you know, what's in your healthcare record? I read once, or someone told me, that your boss Farzad made everyone on staff find out what their personal health records had in.
That's
huh?
Exactly right. You know, he was at a conference recently in San Francisco. It's called Healthcare Unbound, and a woman from the Alliance for Nursing Informatics stood up and said, you know, what if we all asked for a copy of our health records? You know, we could create a movement towards getting people to understand what is in our health records. And she, you know, was speaking as a nurse, you know, one of the most trusted sources in healthcare, recognizing that there is incredible power in getting the patient involved. And so, you know, Farzad, you know, he's very, very energetic and inspired. And he came back to the staff and he said, listen, I challenge you to go access your own health record and, you know, see what's in it, but also tell us, you know, report back how you felt. How did it feel to you to ask your provider for that record? Because so many people don't ask for it for a myriad of different reasons. And sometimes it's just sort of sheer fear of what your provider is going to think you want to do with that record, be it leave the practice or think that they have done something wrong, when in fact you just want to know what's in your own record, because in fact it's your information. They wouldn't have information about you if you hadn't walked into that office. So
there may be small revisions challenge. Or maybe major revisions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I could be, you know, it could be that it says I broke my left toe when in fact I broke my right toe. I heard a story of a woman who accessed her information, and she was a breast cancer survivor. And in one of the visual scans that she obtained in her record, she found that there was a male body part listed. And so clearly there had been a mix-up of her scan. And so it obviously calls into question, you know, whether in fact, you know, the rest of her information was correct. And so I don't mean to alarm, you know, it's not that everybody's going to find these massive, massive mistakes in their records. But, you know, it is important to make sure that the information is accurate and correct so that you do have the best information for yourself, for your provider, and so that you can make sure that everybody is on the same page.
You know, I was just thinking about it as we were speaking. I have owned four cars. So I got two kids and a wife, so I have four cars. And I have a folder for each one of my cars at home. And every time I get something done, I put it in the folder, and I know exactly to the penny how much it costs per mile for each one of my four cars. Uh-huh. I have the oil changes. I have the personal property taxes. I've got everything. Well, what about for John Gilroy? Well, I don't even file for me. I mean, someone else has that. I mean, so I have a record for my car.
That's right.
And it's going to rust away, but I don't have a record for myself.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable. I mean, we've hear frequently, you know, people have records for their pets, and their veterinarian emails them that it's time for your dog to come in for a checkup. You know, our automobile dealerships, they email us when they think we've reached a certain amount of mileage and it's probably time for a tune-up. And we've got health information technology all over the place to assist us in judgment and sort of decision making. But health information technology is something that needs to catch up with the rest of all of us who have information technology in so many other places in our lives. So it's really going to be valuable when it becomes more and more pervasive nationwide. But as for right now, we're still in sort of an adoption mode, and we really got to get people to understand health information technology, be willing to adopt it, and carry it forward as a part of their lives, you know, a place where technology can also be a real asset and tool.
Well, there would be a little hint for a listener to get a camera of me going down to my basement and file cabinet and seeing my Toyota and nothing for me. And then you could have a video on, okay, now, John, what kind of is going on with you? And maybe it would be of benefit. We have friends who, she works as a emergency room nurse. Mm-hmm. You talk about tough as nails. Emergency room nurses, anything happens at 2 o'clock in the morning, unpredictable. Someone rolls in. Suppose Damon rolls in unconscious. Well, what's Damon's background? You have no idea. I mean, how do you access that? I mean, I can see it from a very, very practical perspective, just accessing information. What about your record, Damon? You don't have to say anything on the air, but was it all accurate? Was there anything on there that was strange, or was it, no, it probably 90%, 95% accurate, I guess?
Yeah, well, I was very fortunate. I'll be honest with you. My record is pretty much very accurate. I did request a copy of it. I was fortunate that my provider was very, very open to the fact that I was interested. She didn't have any indication that I you know, was up to anything nefarious in terms of coming after her for wrongdoing or anything. And I did verify it, and fortunately everything was okay. And I took advantage of the access to the data, and I uploaded it to my personal health record. So now, you know, my wife and other loved ones have availability of my record online. So it's not just, so when the scenario you quoted, if I were to show up in the ER unconscious, you know, there are people that can access my health information and basically speak for me if I'm not able to do so.
So the blue button is being expanded after 2 years into areas that are way beyond the VA, maybe the VA ever dreamed. Do you work on other projects with the VA, or what kind of interaction goes between those different organizations, both sides of the river?
Yeah, so the VA is our partner in the Blue Button Health Data Mashup Challenge. The VA was the initiator of the Blue Button several years ago, and as we said, you know, it sort of had a soft launch and took, you know, got a massive uptick in users, and it became more and more obvious that more and more healthcare providers and organizations out there could adopt Blue Button, allow people to access their health information, and really provide some value back to patients, consumers, individuals, and caregivers. So, you know, ONC tries to maintain close ties with all organizations that are implementing health information technology types of initiatives across the health, across the government. And obviously the VA with the Blue Button Initiative and its sort of core and patient engagement was an obvious partner.
Let's take a break, Damon. We come back, talk more about mobile madness and mobile access information, talk about your Twitter handle, and maybe find out if you're in fact a card-carrying nerd. We'll find out. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Damon Davis, Special Assistant in the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT at HHS. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's guest is Damon Davis. He's a Special Assistant in the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT at HHS. We've been talking about the blue button mashup and challenges and improving healthcare and empowering patients to help themselves with gaining a better understanding of how their healthcare information can assist physicians in the future. I do a lot of tweeting. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Ray Gilray. And I'm sure you have a Twitter handle too. What's yours, Damon?
I do. It's my Twitter handle is at Damon L. Davis. That's D-A-M-O-N-L Davis, D-A-V-I-S.
Are there any handles you follow or hashtags or anything that you think is important? I think we talked about health IT or something. What's the one we talked about at the break?
We talked a little bit about at ONC underscore health IT.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that might be of interest or sort of a hashtag that I like to follow is pound minority health. Also like pound health data. There's some really interesting conversations that happen in some of those different arenas.
Yeah, health IT is another one to follow. All kinds of ones to follow. I follow physicians. I follow HIMSS. There's a lot of topics out there that percolate up. One topic that my listeners want to know is if, in fact, you are a card-carrying nerd or just a nerd wannabe.
And we'll see what they think after this.
I have put together a scientific 10-question test, and it'll give you a 5-9 degree of accuracy of what kind of a nerd you are. And
excellent.
I'm going to ask these 10 questions here. First question, the year you bought your first computer.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. I don't actually remember ever buying a computer. I've had computers in my life for so long. My father, Willie, is a long-time sort of geek and toy guy, and every time he would turn around and
stealing from your poor father. Is that what you're saying? You admit to stealing from your dad?
Gifts from dad. So he would constantly be handing me down stuff. So I can't even – I'll be honest with you. I just don't remember when I bought my first computer because I always had something cool from him.
So something cool. You're your first cell phone.
Probably in the mid-90s. I was working for a telecom company, so I remember buying one at the time that I was working for them.
Makes sense. And your Twitter feed is Damon L. Davis. That's two Ds there. And you don't have your own blog, but I think you do participate in the Buzz blog, or?
Yeah. So I have a couple of contributions to the Buzz blog. One of them is about the Blue Button Challenge, and I have a couple other ones out there. Some of my colleagues, again, my director for consumer e-health, Ligia Ricciardi, is on there. Our colleague,
she's a good
Karen
one,
there.
Yeah. She's a good one to follow.
Yeah, we've got some great stuff on there with regard to consumer e-health content.
And Ligia's got a Twitter feed that I follow. She
yes.
keeps up with things.
Yes, she's at Ligia, L-Y-G-E-I-A.
Yeah, she's real informed. What kind of personal online backup do you use?
I'm an iCloud guy.
Okay. Flavor of smartphone?
I'm also an Apple guy, okay. So I have an iPhone.
And how many apps are on that bad boy?
72, but I got to admit a solid portion of them are for my 4.5-year-old son.
And he's going to learn from you. He's going to steal that from you, too, you
right.
know?
That's right. So he's going to be getting some really cool hand-me-downs.
Hand-me-downs, yeah, when the good stuff comes out.
Yeah, wait till he learns he's getting an iPad, too, when Daddy got an iPad 5.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like your dad said, okay, you have this brand-new Commodore. Oh, geez, thanks, Dad. That's great.
Right.
What kind of tablet device do you use?
I'm an iPad guy. I've made the conversion. I've switched over completely.
And what social networking sites do you participate in?
So a little bit of Twitter, very little Facebook, and some LinkedIn.
Okay. And the last book you read was electronic or paper?
It was electronic. I read a great book by Otis Webb Brawley called How We Do Harm. It's really interesting to sort of stories of how healthcare, you know, is trying to do the right thing, but because so many of the incentives and other things are set up in just the wrong way, providers sometimes end up taking actions that are not for the benefit of the patient. And it's a very, very interesting book. Again, it's How We Do Harm.
Yeah, the Hippocratic Oath. The first thing is do no harm. I think that's the parallel here. That's what the Greeks tried to encourage many thousands of years ago. Well, this is the time of the show where I get a crystal ball out, and I put it in front of you, and I put a little Swami hat on you, and I have you gaze into the future, you know, 2 years ago, this blue button popped out of nowhere and exploded. I mean, who could have predicted that? Maybe even Todd Park couldn't have predicted that. But I'm going to ask you to predict and say, well, you know, we're in a transition period here. I mean, people are moving from desktops to smartphones and tablets, and then maybe they want the information. Maybe they want their electronic health records in that format. I know physicians sure do. So where do you see this head in the next 4 to 5 years, and what role will ONC play, and how do you see this playing out in the next few years? I mean, this is a tough question. This is one of those Sunday morning TV show questions, but what's going to happen?
No, that's a great question. You know, mobile health has definitely gained a solid place in, you know, typical American life. I mean, people are using mobile devices for everything under the sun, and you know, why should healthcare be any different? And so I definitely think that there's going to be a role for mobile health, or we call it mHealth, in how we figure out all of the different strategies that are going to involve health information technology implementations, you know, across the nation. So, you know, ONC predominantly, though, is focused on health IT for the entire population, you know, nationwide. And so we're not just focused on federal health IT and partnering with, you know, organizations like the VA. So predictions, I would say we're probably going to see a lot more adoption of health information technology in the provider space. I mean, there are some great incentives out there, a lot of resources for providers. And to be quite honest with you, the way that healthcare is evolving currently, there's no way that a provider can move forward as health information technology sort of pervades the healthcare space.
Well, there's a limit to paper. I mean, we've hit the limit to paper. Plus, there's financial incentives to do it differently. I mean, all of a sudden, if it's, you know, the most effective use of funds, then there's no choice. You have to change.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, to be honest with you, if you really want to deliver quality care, you know, the analytics that are provided by, you know, an online system, some sort of information technology, just are far superior to the stack of paper that may be on your desk. There's no way you can glean the amount of information from a set of folders that you can from a set of files in electronic format. So health information technology is going to continue sort of an expansive reach nationwide. You know, our grant programs, the regional extension centers, the Beacon communities are going to be expanding the services that they offer to providers. And that's going to continue the sort of improvement in healthcare quality nationwide.
RECs, I think of the rec center and playing basketball and swimming. What is an REC?
A regional extension center is a really interesting grant program that we have. It's literally boots on the ground, individuals that are helping providers nationwide adopt health information technology into their practices. So, you know, think of the provider who might say, you know, I'm not a tech guy, I don't know anything about computers. It would be really great if somebody would help me. I'm interested in information technology and healthcare. Somebody help me out. And these RECs are individuals and organizations in every state that are helping providers to adopt information technology.
So if you're listening to this when there's snow on the ground and you're residing in Oregon and it's, you know, looking at Christmas or something, you might be able to Google RECs or Beacon, BEACON communities, and find out more. Maybe there's one down the street from you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Pretty much every state in the union is represented by a regional extension center. So there is no reason for any provider out there not to be able to reach out online and find a regional extension center and then be able to get the assistance they need. With regard to the Beacon communities, they are a set of communities nationwide that have sort of already got widespread health information technology adoption, and they're now proving that health information technology can be utilized in order to move the needle on some serious health outcomes. So some of them are focused on utilizing health information technology for diabetes care management or other sort of chronic disease management. So it's a project that says, at the next level of adoption, what kinds of things can we really see some population health improvements on?
So you can go to the Buzz blog and get more information, maybe read some of your blog entries. And there's a whole wide range of people that contribute to the Buzz blog over at ONC and learn more about health records. But I think the big focus, the big message for today is the three A's: access, action, and attitude. And that's really what ONC is all about, is enabling or empowering patients to be more responsible. And the end result is it's cheaper and it's better for the end user.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so there's going to be significant progress in the future in terms of the three A's. You know, attitudes are starting to change. Providers are starting to embrace the idea of allowing access to the information. And patients and consumers and caregivers are starting to embrace the idea that they really should be more involved in their own access to information and their own healthcare towards better outcomes. So the attitudes are beginning the shift. And those attitude changes are making it okay for people to ask for access to their information. So as the health data becomes more free, you know, it's empowering people to take action with the information. And so obviously, as the action sort of takes hold with people, people are going to start to make better and better healthcare decisions. And, you know, there's nowhere to go but up from here. So there's going to be continued growth in using the electronic health records and personal health records for patient access.
And the Consumer eHealth Program, it focuses on the entire population, not just govies. It explodes into everywhere, doesn't it? I mean, that's what's unique about your position, I think, is you're taking electronic health records and you're becoming an evangelist for the people all over the country to save money and be more efficient with their electronic information.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, as you know, we're in public service, and so the desire is to create the tools and services that are going to facilitate the participation by everybody. It's not just, you know, the Android phone holders, the iPhone phone holders, and the people who are holding the most current technology. We also have to acknowledge those that are not holding that technology, but implement the sort of infrastructural things that will allow them to get the best healthcare quality possible. So that's exactly what we're working on.
If you're interested in the challenge, you get more information, just type in blue button mashup, get all kinds of information. Challenge.gov is another place to go, and I think the Buzz blog is a great source of information. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Damon Davis, Special Assistant at the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology at HHS. Thanks, Damon.
Thank you for having me, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.